Hey, everybody, welcome to Backyard Space Opera Podcast. It's me, Kyle. I am joined by Mr. Cody.
Hey, everybody.
Today, we're talking short films. It's our regular segment of, we call Short Film Shoutout. And the idea is Cody and I both pick a sci-fi or fantasy short film, and we make each other watch it, and then we talk about them to decide what are some lessons we can take as we move forward with our own short film productions and trying to, you know, give information and ideas and inspiration to all the other micro-budget filmmakers out there. You want to start with your choice or my choice?
Let's start with your choice.
Okay. So my choice was a reaching back into the day, and it's something that I've wanted to talk about for a while now because I have to thank Johan Carlo of Gundriver, who suggested this to me a long, long time ago, brought it to my attention. I never heard of it, but it's an amazing short film that I think anybody who is a student of film, a student of sci-fi film, and is interested in making their own micro-budget films will get great inspiration from, because it was created by the legendary, the one and only James Cameron, and it is called Xenogenesis, made in 1978. The story of this film is that there was, if you go to jamescamerononline.com, is where I'm getting this info, but I've heard it from other places too, is that he got word of these investors. I've heard legends that it was like a dentist or something, but the idea is he got $20,000 to make a short film to then kind of prove that he could make a feature film in the vein of Star Wars, because that had just come out and it was very popular and people were looking to capitalize on that. And this was his effort, this Xenogenesis, which you can find on YouTube. And it's an amazing short film full of basically stop motion robots fighting each other. And there's all kinds of things to talk about with this movie. But before we get into that, Cody, what did you think when I told you to watch Xenogenesis?
Well, for my first impression was that it looked like someone had put up an old VHS recorder.
Oh, I'm sure that's what it was.
In front of a television and recorded it that way. And then somehow, through some means down the line, uploaded it to YouTube, because it looks as old as it is.
It's definitely. So what happened is he made it on 35 millimeter. He actually got a 35 millimeter camera and rented it. A lot of money went into that back in the day, especially. But this is clearly a VHS rip. And I used to have one of these. It was a video card you can put in your computer, hook it to your VCR, and you could basically digitize VHS into the computer, and they look like this. Did you get past it though? Did you enjoy it? What did you think?
I made it through. I didn't enjoy certain elements of it, namely it looked like stop motion robotics.
It is stop motion for sure.
Yeah, those were pretty awesome. So, and the fact that they used them, and I thought the robot design, I mean, the movements were a little clunky. Maybe that was a time constraint issue of some kind, but you know, I think now with the technology being what it is, they can do much more fluid movements, not the slow robotic turning, walking. But it's interesting. It felt almost like a treatment.
Which it was. It was totally a promotional piece to get more money from these investors, apparently, to make a longer version, a more high budget version of the movie. Mm-hmm. I love this movie because you can clearly see the talent of James Cameron. And I think this movie holds up because the stop motion is not perfect, but I almost like that because I feel like that's what the charm of stop motion is it's not meant to be completely perfect. It's meant to be that kind of special visual. And the other thing to take away from this is when you were doing stop motion back in the day before digital technology, you didn't see what you were getting. You did the movement and you used these calipers and these measurement things to know that you were moving them in the right direction at the right amount of things, at the right distance, but you couldn't see it until you developed the film. So you were basically working blind. You knew you were doing it, but you didn't know what it was going to look like. And I think this looks beautiful, knowing the time and budget constraints he was under to make these stop motion robots. And you can clearly see the influence of the design going into Terminator and later into Alien too, especially with basically the story ends where the main character, the guy starts off, he's exploring this alien spaceship. He gets attacked by this alien robot. His partner comes and saves him, and she's piloting this other robot, and they have this big fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly for, you know, Ripley and Alien fighting the Alien Queen. You can see direct correlations. At least I could.
It's clear like his influence travels through his movies. He had these ideas long before he did Terminator, before he did Aliens, and so he just transferred these ideas that he had into those movies.
And that makes me feel good, because it's kind of what I've been doing, especially. It's kind of like I have these ideas and they evolve and change over time, but I'm still kind of pulling from that same general well. And when we talk about your pick, it sounds like the creator of that movie is also doing that. So it seems like that's kind of a thing that everybody does. And I think it's cool. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you appreciate the laser beam effects? Because I really enjoyed those.
Oh my gosh, the sound effects were amazing for the laser beams. Yes, I also enjoyed when he was, I'm doing air quotes, hanging off the bridge. And it was, you know, the camera angle of laying on the prop piece to give it that hanging effect.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
So a lot of good things. Definitely a film to see if you are like a student filmmaker or interested in making films. I mean, some of the comments on the YouTube page were, you know, you got to start somewhere. It's like, yeah, it's true. You have to start somewhere. Being the time that it was made in, I mean, 1978, it's almost 40 years ago. I mean, there's still a lot of good things about it.
I think it holds up. It's an amazing film. So I think he really had something, and I think that's what really made him great. And I think that's why a lot of great directors come from this visual background, because James Cameron was an illustrator, and he really was into special effects, and he knows how everything looks and comes together.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to move on to your pick now?
My pick was a little more recent, and it was called The Last Man. And it was a short film written and directed by Gavin Rothery, who's mainly a visual effects art department illustrator, animation. That's his background. This was his pet project. And there's a great article that you found, Kyle, on tested.com that goes into some of the details regarding the making of. And looking at the budget, looks like he made this short film for about £20,000, and it was done in the UK. And I tried to, when we talked about doing this short film shout out, I wanted to do, because we've done post-apocalyptic films, but it hasn't been kind of like the lone survivor, you know, almost like the last man on earth kind of thing through whatever reason. And there are several things that I found really awesome about this film, because I viewed a few films that were in the similar vein and just couldn't hold my attention. And I think the strongest aspect of this film is what grabbed my attention, because there's not a lot of dialogue. There's just some voiceover things, and you know, he's looking at a monitor and he's trying to pick up radio signals and trying to communicate with whoever's left out there. What grabbed me was the music. The music was very well done to keep me engaged, and also the visuals. I think the thing I liked the most about this film was the costume of the main character. It was just fantastic. And in the article, they go into the details of, you know, they basically bought a bunch of things and kind of just pieced it all together. And they spent maybe £2,000.
Which is a lot for costume, but
that's not various bits and pieces for production design. So it's the suit, it's the guns, it's the jumpsuit, it's the boots, it's the paint, it's the firefighter masks. That's pretty good for piecing together what it was, because it really looked well done. You know, the gun that he was carrying around was like all custom built.
And I like in the article where he talks about how he purposely chose to put in the extra money and time to make the guns a little custom, because he talked about how in a lot of sci-fi shorts, we get the Nerf guns and paint them. And he did that, thought it looked cool, which I think everybody does. They get the Nerf guns and paint them, like, wow, this is really cool. And it does look really cool. But then you see everybody else is doing the same thing. And we end up having Nerf guns in every movie. And I think he was really smart in saying, you know what, I'm going to do something different. It doesn't take, it's extra work, but it's not that much extra work to customize these guns to give them some kind of a different look than the standard Nerf gun painted look. So kudos to him for taking that extra time. And the costume is amazing, I think, because him finding the right pieces to mix and match, and he says how he took extra time and tracked down just the right piece to get this, get that. It came out really, really well done. I agree that the costume is what held my attention the most. It kept me going, even though there were some pretty long shots. I was like, I'm kind of ready for this to keep moving. But the costume and those things kept it going for me, absolutely.
And again, the cryo chamber was also phenomenally done. I think this film is very visually appealing. And again, there's not a lot of dialogue. You just get kind of voiceover and radio transmissions, garbled radio transmissions and whatnot. For me, it was the music and the visuals that carried it. Some of the other films that I was watching in order to find one to review just kind of lost me, either through the lack of dialogue, and there was just some odd shots, and they were doing like these quick cuts and using strange filters and or different filters. Like one, they had like a blue filter and they were pointing it up at the sky to see like, you know, the tree overhang and all the thing. And then they'd switch to like a yellow filter on the character. And it was just really like, and they used just a bunch of like quick cuts and it was very, almost felt repetitive. It didn't pull me in. And this film did that.
It's interesting, the idea of the different preferences as far as the filmmaking pacing. We talk about pacing of movies and how fast or slow goes and speeding up or slowing down. This movie to me felt very slow, but it felt deliberately slow. It felt like it was trying to make a point being this pace. And mm-hmm. I think it earned that pace at the end. I think it worked. But at the same time, it wasn't my favorite. It wasn't something that I'd say, yeah, this is the movie that this is what appeals to me. But I can see how many people, this is their niche. This is what they appeal to them. This very gritty, post-apocalyptic kind of that, again, that space marine aspect that I like, but I've talked about many times, that's not my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. And I can see why this would appeal to you especially.
Yeah. And again, you know, is it, fantastic job by Gavin Rothery, who not only wrote and directed it, but he was also the production designer, had a say in the costume design.
Yeah, I think he designed the suit and he did the a lot of the visual effects. He said he stayed up many, many nights trying to finish this thing in the time frame he put out there. He had a big crew. He had like a 30-person crew, and the article talked about how he has connections because he's in the film industry. And he was able to get essentially the James Bond crew to come out and be his crew for him for I think for free. And
yeah, the what was it? He credits his fantastic production team of Philip Hurd and Stephanie Bamberg. And he said they did some amazing wrangling with the budget and secured a great crew. He had Terry Bamber as his first assistant director and Peter Field as his director of photography. And he said these guys are typically found working as regular crew on the James Bond films. So, and they brought their own people with them. So
he essentially had the James Bond crew for free or for very cheap, which is amazing.
So, and it says one of the quotes from the article is, we also had a production assistant who wasn't a part of their team named Daniel Craig. So they had a guy on their crew, a production assistant named Daniel Craig, and here's the film, the James Bond film crew working on the film. So a funny coincidence. I enjoyed it because it's one of these many films where it's this last man standing, this last man on earth, whatever you want to call it, that was able to hold my attention and had, I mean, they had a good size budget, probably converting probably right around the area of $30,000 US. And they actually go into it. You can get specific numbers at the article. And again, it's tested.com and you can search for The Last Man.
And it's really cool to see how they broke it down, but they also discusses how he saved costs and trying to find a location and really hustle to make it work for him. I think that's great. I think that's what we have to take away from this is whatever budget we have, we can stretch that as far as we can by using these same tactics. And it seems like that's what everybody does, unless you're a big studio production and say, I'm working under the studio rules and that we're just, this is how we do it. And so we just use the money this way. But as an independent filmmaker and as micro budget filmmakers, we have to say, how can I stretch every penny and get the most out of what I need? And I really like this movie in that it's mostly the single guy tracking through this bombed out city. And the whole thing is his journey through very little dialogue to the end of the film. And I think that relates to our movie that we're working on right now. The Lens Driver Prelude has a lot of the same idea of the single sci-fi soldier moving through the wasteland. Ours has him fighting things and a little more action, is a little more campy, quick cutty, but it's that same kind of premise that we have a character moving through the wasteland, confronting something at the end. And I think that's a cool premise for a micro budget film, because you have one character that you can spend time on and really make that character special, and then bring in other little things around it to add to it. So I think it's a cool formula. It's neat to see it replicated in this movie.
Again, I see your point about some of the shots being long and, hey, let's go. But
it's just an editorial choice. It's just, you know, that's just, I mean, he's doing this because he's a filmmaker and he's working on a feature and he's just experimenting. And, you know, he has the luxury to kind of make these more artistic choices. Whereas I think for us and for other people who are trying to really build an audience, would a person sit through this? And you said that with the music and the costume kept you engaged. Would it keep other people engaged? I don't know. And I don't know if we have the luxury if we're not in, you know, having this big business, you know, we're not in the business. We're not doing this with a name already created. How do we want to keep people engaged, and can we make those same kind of artsy choices? I don't know. I mean, that's, I think we're into that all the time.
But again, I really enjoyed the music. It was very, very engaging. The visuals are very engaging. I think it was a well-planned, well-shot film. You know, as you said, you know, some of the takes were a little long, but I get that feeling that kind of set that pace of, like, you know, he's taking his time moving through and just trying to find someone, anyone.
And this is very replicatable. I mean, it's very slick and polished, this movie, because he does have a budget and he does have access to a very professional crew, and that's awesome for him. I hope to get that myself. Maybe one day, I don't know. But I think we can take away from this and say, what is the basics? What is the essence of what he's doing? He's telling this story through visuals. He's trying to pick and choose where he spends his money to get the most impact, keep the audience engaged through the music, through the costume, through the art choices, really looking at the art design, but not letting that become everything in the movie. And I think he balances everything well. So I think this is, like, again, a study in how to balance everything together and make it work. And just, if we can scale it down to a micro budget, it would involve all the CG would be gone, all the elaborate destroyed city matte paintings and rotoscopings, that might be reduced. You might not have 10 destroyed cars. You might have one destroyed car. You might not have access to this giant, cool, desolated building. You might have a shed or something out in the middle. You know, but you can scale this down and still have a really cool movie if you'd make those same kind of deliberate choices. I think that's the takeaway from this.
Yeah. What's the word I'm looking for? Repeatable. It can be easily replicated and not look as polished or pretty. I think it can be difficult to pull off this type of feel. I mean, as he's moving through the streets, I got a very, you know, they're talking about the war and Know Your Enemies and all the posters around. I got a very, like, Fallout feel from it.
Yeah, it was very Fallout. I mean, it's he's a video game guy too, so it's clearly a Fallout-inspired kind of thing.
Yeah, war. War never changes.
But and that's the interesting part, because I think Fallout to me is so campy and so weird, and that's what I like about Fallout. And yet this is not. This is like real Fallout. This is like, okay, what if it was real? And it's like, ooh, it's depressing. So yeah, and that's just a different take on it.
Yeah, I think this was more like futuristic or, you know, set in the future of post-apocalyptic, whereas Fallout was, you know, post, like, you know, 1950s.
Just like Mad Max is the Fallout is the post-apocalyptic 1980s, you know, and it's very campy in that way.
Yeah, it's got that very campy, very tongue-in-cheek kind of feel to it.
Well, you know, good pick, Cody, because I think we can learn a lot from this. So check out these movies. They're both on YouTube. The Last Man is on YouTube, as well as Xenogenesis, the James Cameron movie. Both great learning experiences to take away from and kind of get lessons for our own micro-budget efforts. So everybody check them out. If you want to drop us a line to tell us your thoughts, if you like them, if you agree with us, if you don't agree with us, you can email info@backyardspaceopera.com. You can go to our website and give us a contact form there. So lots of ways to contact us. Cody, anything else before we wrap up?
Be sure to give us a like on Facebook. Give us a rate and review on iTunes. We greatly appreciate it. Again, info@backyardspaceopera.com for any questions, comments, concerns, complaints. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.